Alma Constance.
And I'm Lucinda.
And together in our Kids Law podcast, we're going to take a look at how laws affect children as we grow up.
So, what are we going to look at in this episode, Emma Constance?
Well, in other episodes, we have heard about justice and the rule of law as being very important to ensure that law is fairly and equally applied to everyone. And I would like to know more about the role of ethics and how it works in the legal justice system.
The word ethics derives from a Greek word, ethos, that means a way of living. Ethics in practice generally describes people's behaviour and values. To behave ethically is to treat others with honesty, fairness, and take responsibility for your actions. As in those earlier episodes about justice and the rule of law, ethics similarly requires people to actively demonstrate that they have honesty, fairness, and take responsibility so that they could be trusted to act properly by the general public. To find out how it works in the legal system, let's talk to Richard Moorhead, Professor of Law and Professional Ethics at the University of Exeter Law School, an honorary professor of law at UCL. He is also a member of the Horizon Compensation Advisory Board in relation to the Post Office Horizon scandal.
Hello, Richard. Thank you so much for joining us today on our Kids Law podcast.
My pleasure. Nice to meet you both.
Could you please tell us how the idea of ethics has come about and what it means today?
Well, it derives from the sort of basic human question: what's a moral life? What's a good life? And it relates back to all the questions that the ancient Greeks and Romans were debating thousands of years ago. So it sort of comes from there. The question for lawyers is always: can you be a good person, and can you be a good lawyer? I suppose, and that's why it's particularly interesting for lawyers, because sometimes they are either required to do things for their clients which people don't think are ethical, or they sometimes do things for their clients which probably aren't ethical. So there's sort of two different sets of questions.
And why is ethics so important in the legal system?
Well, it's basically about trying to ensure that people are dealt with justly in accordance with the law, or in some cases dealt with fairly. So if you were accused of a crime, God forbid, but if you were accused of a crime, you would want the lawyers taking the case against you to behave properly, to behave fairly, to enable the court to decide your case fairly based on the evidence rather than based on trickery and not revealing things and bullying you and those sorts of things. So it's about those sorts of questions, really.
Can you tell us how lawyers are trained to be ethical in their work?
That's a really good question. And there is an answer which says perhaps they're not trained, or perhaps they're not trained well enough. But they are taught bits of this in the course that prepares them to become a solicitor or a barrister. So they're taught some of the professional rules that they're supposed to follow. So a classic one: they are not supposed to mislead anyone, but particularly a court. So they're taught rules like that, which are designed to encourage them to behave properly. But they're taught them in a fairly limited way, and they only really start to apply those rules in practice when they're bringing real cases. And when they're doing their practical training, their apprenticeship or their traineeship, or for barristers, their pupillage, when they're doing that training on the job, they are supposed to be coached in that by the people training them and supervising them.
How are the standards maintained and checked when lawyers are in practice to ensure that they can be trusted?
In the main, they're only checked if things go wrong and if they clearly go wrong. So if they make a big mistake and it's picked up by somebody who's watching their case for some reason. So a judge sometimes refers lawyers for breaches of their rules, or sometimes it might be their opponent, or sometimes, quite often these days, the press pick up on things that the lawyers have done, and somebody like me has a look at what's going on and says, well, hang on a minute, I think the lawyers may have done something which they perhaps shouldn't have done here. And it can then be looked at by the regulator, the people who decide whether or not somebody may or may not have breached their rules. So it gets picked up in a variety of ways, but only usually when things have gone wrong. Sometimes the firms that these lawyers work for, or their chambers, they interview the people working for them about these kinds of issues, but that's actually quite rare. So some law firms, this is a good thing they do, when a lawyer makes the step up from being a solicitor to a partner, so the step up from being an employee, a worker, to somebody who helps run and own the business. Some firms do interviews to kind of check whether they think these people are likely to do the right thing if they are faced with a difficult ethical question. So there's a variety of ways, but usually it's only when things go wrong.
Richard, I have a question. Is there any specific post-qualification CPD type of thing that people, as part of their ongoing requirements to keep up to date, has that ever evolved?
There used to be more of a requirement. So the regulators used to specify what certain kinds of training, and I think that's still true for barristers. I think there certainly was until very recently. I'd need to check, but I think there was some training that barristers had to do within 3 years of court, within 3 years of starting to be able to take cases. That's no longer true for solicitors. It used to be true, but it's no longer true. Solicitors are supposed to decide their own training needs and take training accordingly. And the solicitors regulators decided they don't think it's a good idea to try to force lawyers to do particular types of training. But it's a question that is often asked, and it's a point that lawyers worried about ethics quite often make, is that we're not even required to do regular training on this sort of thing. So I think it's an issue which will keep coming back.
But if lawyers do behave unethically, what can happen?
Well, sometimes they can lose their jobs. So sometimes their employers or their chambers can decide they don't want them to work with the firm or in the chambers anymore. That's usually if they've done something very controversial. It isn't always an ethical question, it can be something different. But to give you an example, if a lawyer made very racist remarks on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or whatever it might be, then their employer or their chambers, if they work within a chambers, might say, "We don't want you to be working with us anymore." So that can happen. But if they're reported to their regulator, then the regulator decides whether it's a serious enough case for them to investigate, whether the evidence is there for them to take a closer look, and they usually then investigate and decide if they should be disciplined, prosecuted in essence, through a particular tribunal, a tribunal that only deals with either solicitors' cases, solicitors' disciplinary tribunal, or something called BTAS, which is the bar's tribunal for dealing with these cases. And that's run basically like a court. And the case is brought before that tribunal, that court in effect, to decide whether or not they've breached their professional rules. And often there are lawyers on both sides arguing whether they have or they haven't. And at the end of it, if they're found to have behaved unprofessionally, to have committed serious professional misconduct, then they can be fined. They can be suspended, so they can be told they can't practice as a solicitor or barrister for a period of time, or they can be struck off, which is essentially being thrown out of the profession and told they can no longer practice as a solicitor or a barrister. So that's the range of responses.
Richard, I have another question. Have there been instances where criminal sanctions are brought against solicitors if they give false evidence or defraud the courts in some way?
Yes, so it's not, and it can be less serious offences than that. Punching somebody, drink driving sometimes used to be taken into account, less so these days. But typically, particularly dishonesty offences, but other offences too, but particularly dishonesty offences, you would expect if they're convicted of theft or fraud, or if they have misled the court, you would usually expect them to be struck off. The professional tribunals take a very serious line on dishonesty offences, misleading the court. They don't always strike people off. So sometimes people have been just suspended for a short period for misleading the court, 6 months, a year, that kind of thing. But usually people would be struck off.
Do you mind if I just ask a follow-on question? There has recently been a lot of publicity in the press about what's called the Post Office Horizon scandal. And I wondered whether you felt it was appropriate to use that as an example where people are shining a spotlight on misconduct.
Oh, no, I'm very happy to talk about it. The trouble is, it's a very long and complicated story. In broad brush terms, the post office had a computer system which is in all its branches, which it used as an electronic till and accounting system. The software in that system was faulty, so it would, from time to time, create false entries. It would suggest there was money missing when there was not. So if you imagine working in a shop, you've been working in the shop all day and you've been putting in the prices, taking the money, putting it in the till. At the end of, in this case, a week, each week, sometimes the electronic till would say to the people running the post office, you seem to be missing several thousand pounds or several hundred pounds, sometimes tens of thousands of pounds. Where is that money? You have to pay us that money. If you don't, we're going to sack you. We're going to kick you out of your business. Or we're going to sue you for the money so that you repay us the money. Or sometimes, quite often, hundreds of people this happened to, we're going to prosecute you, say you've stolen the money and prosecute you for that. And they did so on the basis of computer evidence that was unreliable. The computer system wasn't working properly. So it was saying there was money missing sometimes when it was not. And then they were prosecuting people on the basis basically of those computer records. So they would interview people and say that the money is missing. What's your explanation? You haven't got an explanation. Tell us where the money's hidden, you know, this sort of thing. Sometimes people would just give in and confess, even if they hadn't stolen the money. Sometimes they would resist. Post office would then try and pressure them into pleading guilty in the criminal courts. So there was a whole series of questions about whether the lawyers in those cases had behaved fairly. Had they tried to prosecute people when there was enough evidence to prosecute them? So did they have evidence that they had the money, for instance? They often didn't check whether people had the money. Was there evidence that they'd been dishonest? They often didn't have evidence that they were dishonest. Did they have evidence that the computer system worked? To which the answer was no, or they had some evidence, but that evidence was itself was flawed and was misleading in several respects. And the lawyers helped, it seems, based on what we're hearing in the inquiry at the minute, the post office inquiry, it seems the lawyers sometimes helped make the evidence seem stronger than it was, is probably the most neutral way of putting it. So there are a whole bunch of questions like that about lawyers' involvement, and it goes on for years in a number of different types of cases and different approaches. So lawyers sometimes helped write reports which said the computer system is fundamentally sound, or the post office's approach to prosecuting people has been fundamentally sound, when the evidence actually suggested it was not. And so the question is, have the lawyers done anything wrong there too? So there's a whole bunch of those questions stretching basically over about 20 years, and it's got a lot of attention because, you know, literally hundreds of people were convicted of criminal offences where they probably hadn't done anything wrong, and dozens and dozens of them were punished, many sent to prison, had their lives ruined, lost their marriages, lost their health, became depressed, some people killed themselves, and so on and so forth. So the kind of injustice of treating people unfairly in the criminal and civil courts and in other ways involving lawyers has led to literally thousands of people's lives being damaged or even ruined. So that's why it's so important.
Thank you.
So, are there any things that could be done to prevent these problems?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I have a sort of a long list, but it's quite technical and it's quite lawyerly. So I'll try to just boil it down to some basics. One approach is that lawyers need to be more aware of what they're supposed to be doing, and that means sometimes applying the right rules that courts require them to use, which often didn't happen in these cases. So criminal lawyers were required to do certain things and they weren't doing them, but also that broader sense of how to behave ethically, that they actually do have to behave in a way which promotes the interests of justice rather than simply the interests of the client, the interests of the post office in this case. So they have to sometimes put, if you like, justice or sometimes people before money, commerce, profit, the desires of the business. And that's something which lawyers are not very good at, and they need to get better at that. The ways in which lawyers work with companies, I think, needs a good look at. There are issues around the way that courts work and how lawyers interact with courts. So changing the court rules, perhaps, to make things fairer could be looked at. Various things like that. But the basic point is actually treating individuals fairly and with justice, both the courts doing that and lawyers doing that, even when they're on the other side, is almost the central point.
Have you come across any cases that involve children who have been affected by unethical conduct?
Well, there are cases. So there are cases in the family courts, there are criminal courts. Lots of young people are dealt with by the criminal courts. Youth courts, they're called, because they deal with children. The quality of representation in youth courts for years has been a subject of great anxiety. So there's a real question. Law firms tend to treat children criminal cases as somehow easier and less high status. And so they send off sometimes, not always, their less experienced lawyers to cut their teeth on those cases. And that's a real problem because, you know, these are people whose lives are almost determined after they've got convictions. They need the best representation rather than the most inexperienced, if you like. So there's real questions about that. In cases like the post office, they didn't prosecute any children that I'm aware of. But of course, a lot of these sub postmasters and sub postmistresses, the people who ran the post offices, had kids. So there's a really famous case, and I'm afraid it's just an example. The case is Lee Castleton's case. He wasn't prosecuted, he was simply taken through the civil courts, but the post office kicked him out of his post office, and people where he lived started to accuse him of being a thief without any evidence to suggest that, just because the post office said that he owed them money. And his kids went off to school and were picked on and actually spat on and bullied because of what the kids said their mum and dad had done. So there's those kinds of secondary effects, those kind of knock-on effects, and you can sort of start to see how difficult that would be. So there are those kinds of examples. Immigration cases, the legal system, people treat immigrants pretty badly. So there'll be lots of examples there too, I'm sure. But criminal justice is always the biggest flashpoint.
So, why did you decide to specialize in this area?
That's a really good question, because for a long time I said I wouldn't. I've always done work on lawyers. I've always been really interested in lawyers. I went to university. I did a law degree. The most interesting course that I did was an unusual course. It wasn't about contract law or criminal law or family law or commercial law. It was about lawyers. It was just about what do lawyers do? What does it mean to be a good lawyer? How do you become a good lawyer? And I had a bit of a scientific background at school. I did science, mainly science A levels. I did English and maths and physics. So I was interested in sort of scientific things. And in one of the courses one day, we did something which tried to measure what good negotiation looked like. It was basically a big psychology experiment, almost a kind of a big elaborate negotiation role play that the researchers had done. It's put by a guy called Reifer, called The Art and Science of Negotiation. And I could sort of see, oh, you can do sort of experiments and proper research on social science on what people like lawyers do. And that's what got me interested. So I did loads of work on lawyers. So I've done lots of work on legal aid and quality, competence, whether lawyers are good at their jobs or not, that kind of thing, and access to justice. And I got offered a job around law and ethics at a university in London. And I thought, yeah, no, I want to go do that. And so I started to shift across from competence to ethics. I've done some work on lawyers' fees and how that impacted on how lawyers behave. So I'd sort of had a grounding in ethics through that. And so I started to do work when I went down to London, which was much more focused on ethics, and started a blog. So it's called Lawyer Watch. And I start that was a just a vehicle for me to write anything I wanted to do about lawyers without having to worry about it being an academic. Some lawyers took an interest. And ethics cases kept coming up to write about. So big cases, usually where judges had pointed out things that lawyers had done wrong, would turn up, and it was just a very interesting thing for me to write about. So I started to write about those, and that's kind of what led me to the post office case, really, because the post office is in many ways just a really big example of the sorts of things I've been writing about for quite some time. So yeah, that's how I ended up doing ethics, really, sort of by accident.
I have a question I ask all of our guests. What were you like at 10, and what did you imagine you'd go on to be as an adult?
10. What was I like at 10? I was a bit cocky. I was quite shy, actually, but I was a bit cocky. So I thought I was quite clever, but I was quite shy, really. I wanted to be good at sports, and I tried really hard, but I wasn't very good. So I wanted to be like everybody did, either a professional footballer, or then I wanted to be a pop star, you know, in the way that everybody who's young wants to be but doesn't really mean it. And then I didn't really know what I wanted to be. So I became a lawyer sort of by accident because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do at university. And so I thought, well, I'll do law because there's kind of a clear career at the end of it. So that's how I drifted into law. But yeah, 10. Yeah, cocky and shy at the same time. There's a strange combination, but that's probably what I was like.
I know quite a lot of people that are cocky and shy at the same time in my class. So I don't think it's
Okay.
that strange, to be honest.
Okay, well, they're all going to become law professors. God help them.
No, please not. No. Well, thank you so much for explaining what the role of ethics is and why it's so important. Do you have any final advice for children who might want to know more about this topic?
Gosh, no, just read the papers and take an interest in the world, and that's how you learn about these things, I think, really. Don't always believe things just because lawyers say them either. That's the other piece of advice. Lawyers always have a point of view, but just don't accept everything they say straight away, even if that lawyer happens to be your mum or your dad.
Well, Alma, what do you think about what Richard told us?
Well, Richard said that ethics is trying to ensure that people are dealt with justly and fairly. He says that lawyers do not receive much formal training in ethics. Teaching is limited and in practice only comes to light if things go wrong. If lawyers are disciplined by their regulators, they can face dismissal or criminal sanctions, especially for dishonesty offences. Richard says there should be more done to raise awareness about it. Lawyers should put justice and people before money and profit, and the courts should put more rules in to enable fairness. In terms of how ethics can affect children, Richard explained that how they are represented in youth courts is not always equitable, as some firms may send less experienced lawyers for these complex cases, which need experienced lawyers. At 10, Richard describes himself as a mix of shy and overconfident, and wanted to become a pop star. He adds that he thinks it is very important to take an interest in the subjects you enjoy, read the news, and have your own point of view.
That's right. The consequences of being caught in the criminal justice system for young people can be devastating, as can the impact on families and the post office staff who are unfairly accused of dishonesty in the Post Office Horizon scandal. In our podcast, we've been exploring how laws work and affect young people. All of these things help children understand their rights and responsibilities so that they can make informed decisions, not only about their lives, but also about voting for MPs who make the laws and understanding how the legal justice system works. It's also important that children know that they should be kept safe and that adults must care for them. Remember, if you have any worries, talk to an adult you trust and tell them how you feel. This includes your teachers at school who are there to look after you too. So tell them you need to talk to them. You can find more information on our Kids Law Info website, and you can contact us with any topics or questions you'd like us to explore.
Keep your questions coming in. Subscribe, rate, and share the podcast with your friends, as it is so important to spread the word. See you soon in the next episode.
Bye. Bye.